Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of the Cancer Horizons podcast. Each week, we'll be hearing from patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, and healthcare professionals to do what CURE does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. What do you do when your baby is diagnosed with an aggressive brain cancer during the beginning of a global pandemic? That's the situation Eugenia Chong found herself in when her daughter was diagnosed with stage 4 medulloblastoma at only 23 months old. Eugenia, a clinical nurse specialist at Keck Medicine University of Southern California, was also 4 months pregnant at the time. In today's episode of the Cancer Horizons podcast, Eugenia explains what it was like to go from a nurse to a parent of a child with cancer, how the childhood cancer space has evolved in the past 20 years, the unexpected upsides of navigating cancer during the COVID-19 pandemic, the importance of community for cancer caregivers, and more.
Tell me a little bit about yourself. Tell me about Florence. Tell me about your family. Just give me a little bit of background about your whole dynamic.
Florence was my firstborn. I actually named her partially after Florence Nightingale. My mother was a nurse. I'm a nurse. The pandemic hit. We were actually in the process of moving. And while we were doing that, I noticed that she was starting to throw up early in the morning. And she kind of regressed. And she was walking, but she started crawling. And I chalked it up to just all the changes going on in the world and with our family. But it kept persisting. And we decided to get a second opinion. Her pediatrician was kind of writing it off as gastroenteritis, just a stomach bug. But it just was not going away. So the second physician who actually completed her infectious disease fellowship at CHLA urged us to take her to the emergency room. They did a CT scan and pretty quickly discovered that she had a very large tumor. And that began our 40-day stay for the first admission at the hospital. At that time, we met Dr. Jason Chu, who was a neurosurgeon. He decided to insert a drain into the ventricle of her brain to offload some of the fluid that had gathered and was causing the symptoms. So pretty shortly after that, the throwing up ceased. A few days later, she got onto the OR schedule to have the operation to have the mass removed. We're so grateful that they were able to remove everything. And at that time, we were then waiting for the pathology to understand what specific type of cancer or tumor it was. And of course, we were just praying and hoping that it was something benign. But unfortunately, we got the news that it was stage 4 medulloblastoma. So after surgery, we were waiting for her to heal. We were downgraded from the ICU to a step-down progressive type unit while we were waiting for the pathology. Florence was starting to walk again. So child life came by, physical therapy came by. Obviously, it was a very trying time for us. Florence had to have many peripheral IVs and things like that. But the focus was on rehabilitation. Mm-hmm. And after we got the pathology results and met the oncology team who would be kind of resuming her care, we started our first round of chemotherapy. So she had to get a central line placed in her chest. So we started our first cycle of chemotherapy that admission.
So what was it like being in the hospital, having a young child, undergoing treatment, receiving care? Oh, during a global pandemic, by the way. I mean, as if you didn't have...
Oh my gosh. You know, it was obviously very, very scary. It was frightening. I was also 4 months pregnant at the time with my son. I was also working as a nurse at the hospital. Of course, took some time off. So at that time, I was putting together protocols for the hospital and things like that. So I had kind of an awareness or an insider's view of just the massive undertaking that hospitals were doing to pivot, to be able to adjust to managing a global pandemic. But at the same time, because the care was so incredible at Children's Hospital, I was able to just be completely present with Lawrence as a mom. It was challenging that only one parent was allowed at a time to stay with her. You know, while I was working, Grandma was her primary caregiver. Mm-hmm. And so she couldn't see, Grandma couldn't see her for 40 days, which was very challenging. But also my husband and I had a conversation where we said, if, you know, our child was to be neutropenic and not have a defense, this actually might be the best time where people are distancing and washing their hands and wearing masks. So I would say there was a silver lining.
And how was Florence's demeanor during the entire 40-day stay? I mean, it's not easy for anyone, let alone a very young child.
That's true. She was very distraught in the beginning. Yeah, just physically, just all the needle sticks and things like that. It was very hard.
Yeah.
But I have to say, child life specialists, they're incredible at what they do.
So what type of services did a child life specialist offer?
They were able to provide services to distract her from painful procedures, engage her to communicate her needs and her fears at her developmental level.
Interesting.
They provided a type of presence that was non-clinical, which actually created a less scary environment for a child. They also provided support for me, giving me breaks so that I could, you know, just leave the room for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they educated me on how it gave me tools and skills to talk about things with Florence in a way that she would understand.
So one thing I did take away from a lot of the experts that I spoke with is that throughout these 20 years, there was a huge emphasis placed on supportive care. And you kind of alluded to that already. Why do you think that was so important for both yourself, Florence, and your entire family to have that support literally for you?
You know, I think especially for children who are in the midst of treatment and trying to overcome an illness, it's the family around them that is also bridging the care from inpatient to outpatient. It's the whole family unit. And I think healthcare as a whole, perhaps in the past, used to focus on just the family, but as human beings, we're always in relationship with others. And for children, that's naturally their caregivers. So I think as we think about caregiving, not just for children, but for people in general, we do have to support the structures and the people, the relationships around them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm so pleased and thankful that that support was there for us when we needed it.
That was really interesting that you said, even though they knew I was a nurse, they first saw me as a mom. Why do you think that kind of perspective as, you know, mom number one, nurse number two was so important?
It would have been easier to maybe assume that as a clinician, I would understand things,
mm-hmm.
Which I did. I think it was harder to empathize with me as Lawrence's mom,
mm-hmm.
was also pregnant. They just allowed me to be whoever I needed to be to help Lawrence and our family get through this. And my husband is totally not familiar with the medical field, and mm-hmm. and that's another layer that makes caring for pediatric patients really challenging, is you have to help the families and the parents and the caregivers come along, so you're not just dealing with the patient and the children, but their extended support systems.
How is Florence doing now, ever since two years ago? Yeah,
amazing. We spent the summer surfing and camping, and it has just been so nice getting outside. She started preschool.
Mm-hmm.
I just got her preschool photos back. Yeah, so she's made friends, and she's gained a lot of independence, and she has just, her words have exploded, and her personality has really developed, so She's just wonderful. You would not be able to know that she's gone through cancer treatment.
Does she do follow-up still? Is she kind of on a monitoring basis? How does that work, especially with such a young child?
Yeah, so she's closely monitored. She has an MRI every 3 months for the first 3 years. Mm-hmm. And then they start kind of stretching that out. But she'll be closely monitored for the next 10 years.
So how do you think the advancements, whether it be more inclusion of supportive care or even the care, the treatments that she underwent throughout her cancer journey, how do you think those advancements made in those areas kind of impacted the care that Florence received, the support that you and your family received, and everything else?
And I recently saw a documentary on Netflix called Lion in the House. Mm-hmm. It's so good. I highly recommend it. But when you see that documentary, which was shot in the 70s or 80s, you can see the beginnings of the technology that is standard of care now. Hmm. So the medical care, I would say, generally hasn't improved too much from that time. And a lot of the chemotherapies that we use were developed back then too. But I think as you mentioned, the supportive care has really improved to meet the more holistic needs of a patient and their family going through something like this, very intensive chemo treatment. It has made all the difference. And, you know, patients with cancer are living longer. So survivorship programs and things like that is very important. Mm-hmm. Time will tell what the lasting long-term effects of the chemotherapy and stem cell transplant will be for Florence. Mm-hmm. But I think that kind of supportive care will help honor the incredible things that she's overcome at a young age, and is a testament to just us as a society being cognizant of the whole person and the needs of the whole person and mm-hmm. their role in society and setting them up to contribute and to live a good life. I think that's very important.
What advice would you give to parents who may have children with cancer?
Oh my gosh. I would encourage them to share with their communities. I'm a very private person myself, but we decided to share our journey to not be alone. And so many people showed up for us. Wow. And in the midst of a pandemic and isolation and social unrest at the time, we experienced such generosity and kindness and community. So I highly recommend that. I also highly recommend connecting with families that are going through this. There's Facebook groups and different organizations, charitable organizations that you can get plugged in with. Mm-hmm. I think those would be the two major recommendations.
Is there anything else you wanted to mention before we finish up?
Pediatric cancer research only received 4% of NCI funding. And so we largely rely on donations and charitable organizations to support research mm-hmm. For novel treatments for children, which needs to continue to happen. And we're so appreciative of. But also, I am just brought to tears when I think about the many donors and faceless people that I will never have a chance to meet who have donated blood. They literally saved Florence's life. She needed so many blood transfusions. And there's a national shortage. So there's many ways to give. There's many ways to contribute and to get involved. So that's another way. Mm-hmm. But also there's a Gabriella Miller Kids Act. So if people can ensure that their senators support the bill. It's a way to encourage pharmaceutical companies to contribute to research so that the children, sometimes children do not qualify for clinical trials, if they have kidney disease and other things as a result of treatment, receiving treatment. But they really depend on clinical trials for hope for a cure. And so there's many ways that people can contribute and be a part of the cause and advocate for this. And truly, when you hear parents advocating and sharing their stories, they're not just doing it for their children. They're doing it for their neighbors, their grandchildren, for the future children. So I hope that people will kind of see where we're coming from, and we just appreciate the support.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cancer Horizons podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcast. The Cancer Horizons podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and
find us on Twitter @cure_today, Facebook @Cure Magazine, or Instagram @curetoday.